You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This is the sound of the California condor, a once severely endangered bird. They went extinct in the wild, and the number of birds in captivity was as low as 27. The process of trying to protect and regenerate the condor population began in the early 1900s. Since then, government agencies have spent $20 million on the conservation effort, making it one of the most expensive in U.S. history. Now, wildlife biologists have something to celebrate. The 1,000th chick has hatched in a recovery program that started in the 1980s. The Oakland Zoo participates in that program, and a few years ago, when they were first getting started, reporter Alyssa Kapnick went to find out what they do there.
So we're passing lions right now. And we're coming up on our aviary right here.
Don't run into people, Brock.
Nikki Mora is leading me through the Oakland Zoo. She's the marketing and PR manager here, and she has special access to a hidden part of this animal world.
I don't know how muddy it's going to be down here. We're going to go down this path.
We head behind the zebra exhibit and beyond the elephant barns.
Oh, they have the little sign up. That's kind of cool.
And finally, we've reached our destination. A giant empty cage hidden away from zoo visitors, out of earshot and out of sight.
They put up this mesh right here so that it's kind of a sound barrier and sight barrier outside of the facility so that the birds don't get scared and they're just kind of in their own environment back here.
The cage is about 20 feet square and 10 feet tall, built for the big birds who will eventually land here.
Obviously, we never want to have them here because that means they're sick.
This is Dr. Andrea Goodnight, the associate veterinarian at the zoo. She's been studying condors for years and feels a personal investment in preserving them.
I can tell you the first time that you see a condor in the wild is just a magical experience.
The way she describes it, when the California condor takes flight, it flaps its wings once and then just rides the wind currents for hours at a time. The birds can fly 150 miles at a stretch and as high as 15,000 feet in the air.
I can recount when I was in Pinnacles National Monument hiking with my husband, and I was condor spotting because I knew that they were supposed to be there, and I kept looking. I'd look up and see a big bird, and we'd both point, oh no, it's a vulture. Oh, it's another turkey vulture. Oh, it's a turkey vulture. And then you see this thing that makes this big shadow come over, and you point, and it's like, oh, that's a condor. And there's just nothing like it.
It's a beauty humans have long wanted to capture. Museum collectors used to kill condors for their displays. And it's no wonder. The bird is magnificent. A wingspan of nearly 10 feet and a shock of red skin on its skull. Condors were also hunted for food and their eggs stolen by egg collectors. In the first half of the 20th century, the federal government started trying to preserve the birds. But by the early 1980s, there were only about a dozen wild condors left. By this point, scientists had been studying the bird for years. They acted quickly by literally going out and collecting every single bird they could find and bringing them to breeding sites at the San Diego Wild Animal Park and the Los Angeles Zoo. They found and captured the last known wild condor, whom they called Igor, on Easter Sunday, 1987.
Luckily, these scientists were able to figure out how to breed the birds in captivity, how to release them, how to get them successfully back out in the wild.
Biologists began releasing the condors just 5 years after they'd collected them all. But the birds still aren't totally out of the woods, so to speak. It's illegal to hunt them now, but hunters are still a danger. The condors are scavengers, which means they don't often kill their own food, but rely on eating animals that have already died.
And so what is happening to the birds now is that they're eating carcasses that they find out in the wild that have been shot by hunters or ranchers or poachers at times as well.
Nowadays, the carcasses the condors eat are often animals that were shot and killed by lead bullets. This means that the meat has lead poisoning. And when the condors eat that meat, they get lead poisoning. Death by lead is slow and painful. Lead poisoned condors have trouble flying and walking and can't protect themselves. They fall off cliffs or starve to death. The problems become so severe that scientists now go out regularly to test the wild condor's blood levels and take them back for treatment if their levels are high. Which brings us back to the Oakland Zoo.
What we do is basically give them a drug that helps pull the blood, lead out of the blood, and then they are able to excrete it through their kidneys.
The process Dr. Goodnight is describing is called chelation. It can take from a week to long months. During that time, the scientists want to make sure that the birds don't get too used to humans so that they'll be ready for release back into the wild as soon as they're cured. This means taking some extreme measures.
Here you can kind of see there's two holding areas, so we could actually treat two sick condors down here.
This is Nikki Mora again.
I would say each side of the holding facility is probably the large of a small living room or sitting area that one might have in their home.
A sitting area with chain link fence walls and no insulation.
In the wild, the birds would not have a heated environment, so they don't want them to get used to special cozy environments.
When the birds arrive, the scientists and vets will be able to monitor them by video 24 hours a day. The zookeepers want as little contact with the birds as possible, so the zoo has designed some special systems.
There's actually a chute. See that chute right there? That's where they're gonna feed the birds.
Moore is pointing to a big black tube sticking out of the cement wall and into the pen. The zookeepers will feed the condors through the chute so that the birds won't think that the food is coming from humans and won't, therefore, become reliant on humans for food. In theory, this will all work perfectly. The condors will get better, they'll be released, and they'll live their lives in the wild. But scientists at other condor rehab centers have already discovered another problem. Once they're released, the birds go right back to finding and eating lead-tainted meat. They're still getting sick. So biologists are trying yet another intervention. Here's Dr. Goodnight again.
The biologists are literally dragging cow carcasses up there, these calves that they get from dairies, stillborn calves. They take them up there. They know that they're non-tainted. They know they don't have any lead in them. And so they supplementally feed the birds. And obviously, this can't continue forever. It's not a self-sustaining population that way.
It's easy to see why scientists thought it was the obvious choice to remove all condors from the wild and bring them in for breeding. Otherwise, they'd disappear forever. It's harder to determine how much and for how long the birds have been changed by human contact. In an open letter from September of 1980, David Brower, founder of the Sierra Club Foundation, wrote the following.
A condor is only 5% feathers, flesh, blood, and bone. The rest is place. Condors are a soaring manifestation of the place that built them and coded their genes. That place requires space to meet in, to teach fledglings to roost unmolested, to bathe and drink in, to find other condors in and not biologists, and to fly over wild and free.
Alyssa Kapnick reported that story in 2013 when the Oakland Zoo first joined the Condor Recovery Program. They still treat condors for lead poisoning, but good news, a statewide ban on lead ammunition used for hunting went into effect July 1st of this year.